I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. Well, Washington voters told Olympia they love unnecessary taxes, so now Olympia's just giving it to them, good and hard. Plus, we thought we were done talking about Governor Jay Inslee, but he gave voters a big middle finger on his way out the door in his final address, we'll discuss. And here's how you can tell Democrats are losing their grip on the gender ideology debate. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com, and we would sure appreciate you doing so. Hello, and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. I really hate to do this to you on a Wednesday, on hump day of all days. I really thought that we were done with Jay Inslee, that he would ride off into the climate sunset and we'd never hear from him again or have to have you hear from him again, but I just can't do it quite yet. Of course, after 12 years, yesterday was Governor Jay Inslee's last official day in office. Today, we will have a new governor, Bob Ferguson, and we'll have plenty of time to talk about Bob Ferguson because he'll be the governor for as long as he wants to be the governor. 12 years, 16 years, 20 years, governor for life? I don't know. But Jay Inslee gave, this was after our show yesterday, his parting kind of state of the state address, if you will. Jay Inslee needs to be studied in an institution. Like, he actually needs to be studied in a lab by scientists. Because his level of being oblivious is unlike anything I think this planet has ever seen. His ability to just, I don't even think it's lies. God, I might take it back. All this time, I don't even know if it was lies. I think he's convinced himself that these things are true and that what he says makes sense. And he's actually convinced himself that he's left Washington State in a better place than he found it. So I just have to, I'm sorry, please forgive me. And a special thank you to Nicole, and for everybody just loved Nicole today because she had to go through and listen to his entire speech so she could pull the very best bits. That's hazard pay material right there. So of course he's given this speech, you know, we're in a horrible position on all fronts, any front, leaving us with a $14 billion budget deficit. Here's what he had to say about Washington State's economic outlook.
The Great Recession triggered major reductions in spending and services, $11 billion in cuts, about the same amount of the budget gap we face today. Today, our economy is not in decline, unlike the Great Recession. Our economy is doing as well as it ever has. But that prosperity hasn't bloomed equally. While fortunes for some are growing, so are the lines at the food banks. Our economy provides more than enough to some, but our regressive tax system is unfair to most working families and jeopardizes our continued progress on the systems that Washingtonians depend on. My budget in December proposed $2 billion in cuts, budget cuts, but pruning significantly more than that, I would consider a slide back to those dark days. We have a strong economy. So why would we consider cuts?
Because you have a $14 billion budget deficit. There's so much in there. He says the last time we were facing a situation like this was the Great Recession. And he doesn't understand. He doesn't understand that. And then he goes on to say our economy is strong. Okay, then why are we in a fiscal situation so bad it's comparable to our last recession? He doesn't understand. Our economy is so strong. You're leaving us with a $15 billion budget deficit, which only proves the point that if you're saying our economy is strong, then the only reason to be in such a profound budget deficit is you spend too much money. The last line there is insane. Again, it should be studied in a laboratory. He says our economy is strong. So why would we make cuts? Because you're in a deficit of $14 billion. This is, it's insane. It gets worse too, it gets worse. Of course, it wouldn't be a Jay Inslee speech unless he waxed poetic about how wonderful and welcoming and woke of a place Washington is.
Washington values make us a place of refuge and opportunity in an unstable world. The secret of our success is we don't leave anybody behind. We follow the science and we work together to make extremely difficult decisions. We are a beacon of progress by so many measures. We refuse to leave our neighbors behind.
Yeah, in Washington. Of course, we refuse. We don't leave anybody behind in Washington. We refuse to leave our neighbors behind. Nicole, can you play that cut for me just one more time so it can really sink in for folks the message he's delivering there?
Washington values make us a place of refuge and opportunity in an unstable world. And we inspired a nation. The secret of our success is we don't leave anybody behind. We follow the science and we work together to make extremely difficult decisions. We are a beacon of progress by so many measures. Because we follow the science, we work together. We refuse to leave our neighbors behind.
We refuse to leave our neighbors behind. Refuse to leave our neighbors behind. Yeah, not, you know, ignore the record number of homeless on our streets and the drug addicted and all the science we follow with that. We refuse to leave our neighbors behind. We don't leave them behind. We just leave them suffering on the streets with needles in their arm. That's it. No big deal. Oh my God, this guy's unhinged. And then actually there was a little bit of news out of this event. So he, of course, can't leave without taking a shot at Donald Trump. And actually some Republicans left the room when he delivered this line right here.
Our state will work with anyone on policies that are positive for Washington. But we will not bend the knee to a would-be authoritarian's worst impulses. We will follow the Constitution. We will follow the Constitution. And we will be steadfast in our commitment to the progress of our state together.
Yeah, would-be authoritarian's worst impulses. What does that even mean, by the way? Would-be authoritarian. Like, he's the president. He was the president once before. Would-be authoritarian? So, like, what if only, what conditions would have to exist for him to be an authoritarian? If he wanted to be an authoritarian, then he certainly is in a position to be able to do that and was in a position to be able to do that 4 years ago, but didn't. So it's just insane. I mean, this guy's unhinged from a guy who got 1% in the polling when he ran to be president of the United States. We'll work with anyone except Donald Trump. Well, that kind of sucks for Washington because Donald Trump's going to be the president for the next 4 years. So I sure hope that your predecessor can find a way, or your successor rather, can find a way to work with him. But there were a few Republicans who walked out. I know Representative Jim Walsh walked out and Representative Chris Corey walked out when he delivered that line. Here's what Rep. Corey said on X. Yes, I walked out. I wasn't going to listen to the man who was the last to give up emergency powers in the nation and fought any legislative checks on his power make false inflammatory claims about our incoming president. Good for them. Good for them, honestly, and you don't owe him anything. He's on his way out the door. I'm sure there are a million other speeches and times that they would have loved to walk out of the room, but he was still the governor. But now he has no power or control over them, and so he can walk out into insignificance and make seven figures off his climate grift. But yeah, I mean, of course, he has to take a parting shot on Donald Trump on his way out the door, as if Donald Trump is to blame for all of the issues facing Washington State. So I will try very hard not to bring up Jay Inslee anymore. There's just one other little thing. So he tweets yesterday. There was this Supreme Court case involving RFK Jr. And an appeal over COVID misinformation investigations, and the Supreme Court rejected it. Here is Governor Inslee's tweet about it. Gosh, brace yourselves. Medical misinformation is deadly. SCOTUS has made clear that states like Washington have the right to hold accountable doctors who engage in this practice. RFK Jr.'s war on sound medical advice won't inhibit our ability to protect patients. Yeah, what sound medical advice is that? Jay Inslee, what do you consider to be sound medical advice? 975 days of emergency rule during a pandemic that needed maybe 60 days? Telling people that they had to wear masks when they were dining 2 feet away from people and sit down wearing their masks so they weren't allowed to come in, but then they could take their masks off for the entirety of the time that they were eating dinner, and that was sound medical advice? Firing people over a vaccine that you claimed would be the end of COVID, when it really wasn't you not changing your mind? Is that sound medical advice? Like, can you give me some more examples of you having sound medical advice for the people of Washington State, yet you want to go after RFK Jr., who's not the governor of any state, not going to be the president. He might be part of Trump's administration. It's just insane stuff. Again, he needs to be studied in a laboratory. He needs to be studied in a laboratory for how someone can be just so utterly dumb. I hate to say that, but just absolutely no sense of self-awareness whatsoever. So anyway, hopefully we can move away from Governor Jay Inslee a little bit now that he's out of office and focus on Governor Bob Ferguson. Okay, we broke a story right before Christmas about how a Democratic Senator, Noelle Frame, had leaked these sort of wish list and plans for revenue on the Democratic side. Sent out this email basically detailing every tax proposal that they wanted to drop on the Democratic side. So we knew what was coming. We had an idea before then, but that leaked email, you know, spelt it out in real terms about a wealth tax, expanding business taxes, vilifying the wealthy to be able to get Washingtonians on board with it, property tax increases, increase in this taxes for the sale of guns and ammo, etc. As of yesterday, none of those bills had dropped, though. I mean, we were sort of anticipating, when is this going to happen? Maybe it won't happen. Maybe incoming Governor Bob Ferguson, who said that he wants to focus on cuts rather than new revenue, maybe he rubbed off on them and they decided, hey, let's hold off on those. Nope. They're not going to hold off on them. And why would they? Before I talk about the three that they dropped yesterday, and by dropped, I mean introduced, why would they hold off? Washington voters told them loud and clear in November that they love taxes. Love taxes. Absolutely adore taxes. Didn't want to repeal taxes, even though they were making them poorer, they were completely unnecessary, or they were getting taxed for a farce of a program called the Long-Term Care Act. And whether it was manipulation or not, Washington voters decided, nope, we don't want to repeal the capital gains tax. Nope, we don't want to repeal the long-term care tax. Nope, we don't want to repeal the gas tax. So why would you not, if you were Democrats, say, all right, let's do it. Let's just dive in head first. So this is called reaping what you sow. So they have dropped the wealth tax. And I should stop using the phrase dropped, because it sounds like they dropped it like out of favor. No, they've introduced the wealth tax. So I'm going to give you a couple bill numbers because you're going to want to follow all of these. So House Bill 1319 is going to be the wealth tax. I don't know if there's a companion bill in the Senate already. There probably is, but this was dropped yesterday. A little details on it here. So beginning January 1st, 2026 for taxes due in 2027, a wealth tax is imposed on each Washington resident. The wealth tax equals 1% multiplied by a resident's taxable worldwide wealth. However, the first $100 million is exempt. And so it would apply to the wealth of people who their global assets total more than, and even if they're intangible, more than $100 million. Now, here is the key. So they have a tried and true formula for making sure that initiatives can't repeal their taxes. And they used it this last time around because they passed a bill saying if there's an initiative that would repeal revenue, repeal taxes, we get to put a little addendum at the bottom on the ballot that says all of the things that this would take away from people if you repeal this tax. And so this is our, I think it was Brian Haywood who called this. What they're going to do anytime they pass a new tax, they're going to specifically list in the tax, in the bill for the tax, any sort of stuff that it could fund. And they're going to make it sound like the most heart-wrenching, you know, just absolutely, we have to all sad, like kids with cancer and stuff. And they're going to make sure it's in the text of the bill, because what that allows them to do, if, for instance, Brian Haywood and Let's Go Washington wants to run an initiative to repeal the wealth tax, then they get that little addendum on the ballot, and it says, if you repeal this, children with cancer will automatically die. So they didn't quite go to those extremes, but here's in the language of the bill about what the revenue from the wealth tax will go to pay for. Investments in K-12 education, early learning and childcare, post-secondary education. It'll help with individuals who have developmental disabilities and long-term care for elderly residents. It will help with low-income health care and behavioral health services. So you see that on a ballot, a tax for people who have over $100 million? well, that's not me. And then if we repeal it, then it's gonna take investments away from K-12 education, early learning, childcare, post-secondary education. It's gonna take money away from people with developmental disabilities. This is all, they have the formula down now. They have the formula down. Hey, let's push new taxes. And remember, I'm just gonna revisit it. In that leaked email, we already know the strategy, right? Because they put their strategy in the email with do's and don'ts. Here's how we're going to sell this wealth tax to the public. We're going to be specific about the villain. Talk about the wealthy few and those who wrote our flawed tax code 100 years ago. So they're going to use, and they even said in the leaked emails, the same strategy they used to defeat the initiative to repeal the capital gains tax. They're going to vilify, that's in their own words, they're going to paint wealthy people as the villains, and then they're going to talk about all the things that the villains should be paying for, like helping people with developmental disabilities and behavioral health services and investments in K-12 education and early learning. So we see it right now, right? We know the playbook. We know how it works. We know that they're going to revisit the playbook if an initiative pops up to defeat the capital gains tax. And then they're going to initiative proof it by making sure there's some sad, sad language in the bill that would ultimately make it to the ballot. So there it is, reaping what you sow. We warned and warned and warned Washington voters about what would happen if they didn't repeal the capital gains tax. How the capital gains tax ultimately hurt Washington's economy in a way that hurts the middle class. And the wealth tax will be even worse. Now, first of all, the wealthy, wealthy, wealthy people, they're going to find a way to avoid it. But what happens when they start making budgetary decisions based on the money they think they're going to get from the wealth tax? And then that wealth tax doesn't manifest because the rich people can find a way to hide their wealth or to move to a different state and have that be their primary location. Well, Democrats in Olympia aren't going to say, well, we're not going to invest in those things anymore. No, they're going to find a different source of revenue, a new source of revenue to pay for the things that they thought the wealth tax would pay for. And who are those taxes going to fall on? They're going to fall on the middle class, as they always do. As they always do. Same with the capital gains tax, by the way. As more wealth leaves the state, which it will continue to do. Look at Jeff Bezos. That was only the beginning of people moving their wealth out of state, where he went to Florida, sold his Amazon shares, and I think saved $300 million in the process. So Democrats are used to the money they're getting now from all these rich taxes on the rich. But as those slowly dwindle and dwindle and dwindle, they're going to be in a worse budget deficit. And how are they going to propose getting out of it? New taxes. And at that point, they'll have run out of ways to tax the rich in a constitutional, quote unquote, manner. And so it'll have to fall to the middle class. I mean, it's simple. That's exactly what's going to happen. A couple more things they dropped yesterday. House Bill 1320, which will be a B&O tax increase. Not a surprise there. That's pretty self-explanatory. They're going to increase pretty significantly the B&O tax. And then the other one, and this is the one that we cannot be distracted. We cannot be distracted by the wealth taxes and all of that stuff. We absolutely have to focus on the property tax increase. House Bill 1334, raising property taxes. So this is going to lift the property tax levy lid, which means that if you're in King County, whoever the new executive will be, Dow Constantine for now, he can raise your property taxes 3% per pop without going to voters for it. Right now, it's only 1%. So you're talking about the ability to triple the increase in your property taxes without any sort of vote of the people. And they haven't, they filed that bill yesterday, but there was an outage yesterday of our legislative website for several hours, which I'm not sure what the cause of it was, but they haven't actually dropped the document for that bill for us to read on the fine details. But we know that their proposal is to lift the property tax levy lid from 1% to 3%. And look, I think, to me, that's the most likely one to pass. For all the hand-wringing that we'll do over the wealth tax and what it would mean for our economy and the expansion of maybe Seattle's tax on high-paying jobs and the expansion in the B&O tax at a time when businesses are already struggling, for all the attention that we're going to give that, and we will, I almost wonder if they are relying on that and hoping for that so that regular people don't realize that their property taxes are going to go up. You know, they're going to focus on, we're taxing the rich, the villains, all of that, and hope that you don't see over here, shiny object. And then over here, they're going to slip through this increase in the property tax levy lid. And they actually get, and this is exactly what's going to happen. Mark my words right now. Somebody take note, 115 episode, top of the show. What they're going to do is say, well, we didn't increase property taxes. We gave your locality the ability to increase your property taxes. If they do that, that's not on us. If Dow Constantine decides to increase your property taxes by 3% instead of 1%, that's his decision, not ours. We just lifted the lid. That's how they're going to shift blame, which is absolutely ridiculous because Dow Constantine can't do it without their permission. He's been begging and begging and begging and begging to raise your property taxes at a faster rate. He can't do it without their permission. They're about to give him the permission. So, of course, the question is, they've got all these taxes they're dropping. What does Bob Ferguson think about it? I just want to revisit Bob Ferguson from the legislative preview that happened a couple days ago, where he was asked about some of this. So, first of all, he's been, like we said, a fiscal conservative. He's saying he wants to cut spending, I think it's 4 to 6%. And then he says that he wants to focus on cuts before focusing on revenue. Now, I, again, don't believe him as far as I could throw him. I'm going to, for now, take him at his word that that's going to be his focus, but I don't trust him. But he was asked specifically about these bigger ticket taxes and whether it's something he supports or would sign.
Could you support either the wealth tax or the jumpstart style tax?
Yes. I'm just not focused on that. I did place in the document that you're going to see here that's literally, I think, being released now, I do have a quote in there, right, a comment on the wealth tax. And the reason I put a comment on that is because it is obviously central to the proposed budget, right? So I just felt that was important to say something about that. And you'll have to find the exact words, but I think I express deep skepticism of the wealth tax.
So deep skepticism. He's not saying no to it, though. And look, I mean, their top donor for any Democrat in Washington state is Nick Hanauer. Progressive billionaire, he helped them get the capital gains tax and keep it. But even he's opposed to the wealth tax because he already made his money. He already sold all his big stocks and had his big windfall. And so the capital gains tax isn't a big deal to him. But if it's on worldwide assets, then that would affect him. So, of course, he's just a total hypocrite. But if Nick Hanauer is coming out and saying it's a bad policy, man, that takes some cojones for Democrats to push it anyway. So I don't know. I think that more and more as this unfolds, I really see this as being a distraction from the property tax increases and what will likely be increased taxes on the sale of guns and ammo. So be mindful of that. Don't let them run the narrative that they're taxing the villains, right? Because then just keep pointing out, what about 1334? What about 1334? That's what I want you to comment on every single news story that's posted about them taxing the wealthy. Because they already told us. That's their strategy. They're going to focus on, we're taxing the wealthy few. We're taxing the villains. Tax, tax, tax the wealthy. And what your response is going to be is, what about House Bill 1334? What about the bill that allows property taxes to be increased on every single homeowner and rents increased? It will increase rents as well. Because the person who owns the unit you're living in is going to have higher property taxes. So it's collectively all of our responsibility to push back about any narrative that they're just down there increasing taxes on the rich, because that is a lie. All right, it is the grand opening, new phase of the grand opening for Natchez RV Resort. And this one's really great. So the grand opening weekend that you need to book us showing for is January 25th and 26th. You can do that at NatchezRVResort.com. But this grand opening is the best properties in the entire resort. You'll have the first pick of these lots, 25 premium extra large RV lots with amazing unobstructed views. Yes, they're not building anything behind these lots. So these are on the outskirts of the resort, which is really, really cool. So you get a little bit more privacy there. Natchez RV Resort is awesome. Their pool and their hot tub is now open, by the way. They've got 300 days of sunshine, year-round family fun, fishing nearby, hunting, skiing, golf, wine tasting, and more. And then on-site, in addition to the pool and hot tub, they have pickleball and tennis courts, playground, dog park, miles of recreational trails, 4,300 square foot clubhouse, gourmet kitchen, fitness center, all of it. So reserve your showing for Natchez RV Resort's brand new phase of their grand opening, January 25th and 26th, NatchezRVResort.com, NatchezRVResort.com. No one's standing up for victims of crime anymore. Our complete system has broken down. I mean, we go a lot after individual judges, but I mean, man, when I was covering crime and justice, like if you hurt someone, if you were accused of a violent crime, like you were going to spend a few days in jail at least. It was not going to be easy for you to bail out. we were talking from an assault, maybe $200,000 bail. If you committed a murder or you committed a shooting, $500,000 was the basement of what your bail would be. And if it was a homicide, it was more like $1 million, $2 million, or they wouldn't give you any bail at all. But we treat our justice system is treating violent crime like it's no big deal. And it's genuinely disgusting. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. Imagine this if you're a woman. And this actually kind of hits home for me because, like, I lived alone for a long time. I mean, Nicole lives alone. So imagine you're at home and some dude breaks into your house and assaults you. That's like, honestly, though, that's the worst. Is that not, Nicole, a worst case nightmare for a woman?
Oh, absolutely. And that's why I have cameras and alarms. And I mean, because that's exactly what you're worried about. Break in and attack.
Yeah. And that's like, I think about it all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's weird or if that's normal for women, but whenever Mike's not home, I think about it all the time. And I'm always like, what would I do if somebody broke in right now? Like, you know, leering out the back door, shutting off the lights, stuff. I think about it all the time.
Oh, I do too.
And so this is a worst case scenario thing.
I always have a plan. I know where something heavy is. I know where you know, my nightstand is. I know where things are because if somebody came in that door, if somebody comes in the back door, if somebody comes in the window.
You're thinking about it. And I think that's just something always that women do when they're somewhere and they're alone and they're at home. And I can't think of a scarier, but also like a violation of your being and your sense of safety for someone to come into your home and attack you, right? I mean, that's absolutely horrifying. So that's what happened to a woman in Pierce County. A 35-year-old, this is from Fox 13, a 35-year-old man named Marche Dion Jenkins Jones broke into this woman's home and attacked her last weekend. So luckily, deputies found him. You know, she ends up, he leaves, she calls 911. They find him a few blocks away, covered in blood. And so he's been charged with assault and burglary. What do you think his bail is set at? Breaks into a woman's home, assaults her, found fleeing with blood all over him. $25,000. $25,000. Here's a clip from Fox 13.
Jones was making his way toward a stranger's home. The victim inside saw this and raced to lock her front door, but Jones was able to get through first. He shoved the victim into a table. That woman tore a ligament in her knee and broke her ankle. Okay. On Monday, a judge charged Jones with assault and burglary, setting bail at $25,000. But data I obtained through the county shows Jones has already bonded out of jail.
Proud of our deputies for being able to take him into custody so quickly, but it's also frustrating to make these arrests, put them in jail, and to find out that they're back on the streets within a couple days.
That's disgusting. There's literally no one looking out for victims anymore except law enforcement. And you go through all that work, dangerous situation. I mean, think about that. That's like out of a movie. She sees this guy and he's trying to get into a neighbor's home. She races to lock her door and she doesn't get there in time. And he pushes her down and she tore a ligament in her knee and broke her ankle. And a couple days later, he's out of jail because his bail was set at $25,000. Like, this is why. Where is it? I got a new prop from Tiffany. Thank you, Undivided subscriber Tiffany, for mailing this to me. This is why I'm convinced that this is intentional. It's intentional. It has to be. For the government to make you feel so unsafe because of everything they've done and all these steps they've taken, that you come crawling back to the government to keep you safe, that you give up rights, like your right to bear arms. The government will do it for you. Anything, just anything to feel safe. That you'll let them increase taxes. Oh, like Bob Ferguson, we need $100 million to get more police on the beat after his own party decimated public safety all these years. That's what it is. It has to be. I mean, there's no other reason. Take this off now because it's very serious. There's no other reason for a guy. This should be $500,000 bail. Not only is it a random attack, so you're talking about victims that aren't engaged in illegal behavior. I mean, like if you're out there shooting fellow gangbangers, whatever, honestly. But when you're going random attack, innocent people, victims at random, going into their home and assaulting them. And those are serious injuries. Tore a ligament in her knee and broke her ankle. And you get out a couple days later, $25,000 bail. Now, Pierce County courts are a little odd. I'm not sure who to blame here. So there's commissioners in the court system down there that help with, and I should also note, not just King County problem, obviously, Pierce County. And we've talked about Pierce County having issues with light sentences and plea deals and stuff. Commissioner in Pierce County, Barbara Mickenvale, set the release conditions. We're trying to figure out if prosecutors asked for the $25,000 or if prosecutors had asked for more than $25,000. So we're trying to get to the bottom of that. But there's commissioners that will help out with the court caseload for judges, et cetera. So is this commissioner, Commissioner Barbara Mickenvale. But what are you to do? And imagine that woman's fear now. We're, and do you really think $25,000 is enough to convince someone to come back to court? Because remember, that's a big part of bail, is you set bail high enough where they have the amount of money that you have to give to the court is significant enough where you want it back, right? And you're looking at, you're balancing that against, what's the sentence I face? Like, if I'm going to face 5 years, is 5 years of my life really worth the money that I might lose if I don't show up to court? Probably not. So then you'll abscond, and you'll never show up for court. Because there's no, the monetary promise to reappear isn't as significant as the time you might face. That's supposed to be where they kind of set the balance for bail. But that's just out the window. Can you imagine? Oh my God, if this had happened 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when I first started covering crime in Washington State, this would be the front page lead story on every news channel. Man who broke into a woman's home and assaulted her, released on $25,000 bail. Now it's just a footnote. I mean, I'm glad Fox 13 covered it, of course. My buddy AJ Janivel. I like AJ. He's such a nice guy. So we give the media a hard time, but we like AJ. He's one of the good ones. But it's just insane to me. And then it's, again, like for other women, what do you make of that? Like, you know, no one's going to keep you safe but yourself. And I think that's what we all have to realize. No one is going to keep you safe but yourself. The government is not, as much money as you give them, as much as public safety is supposed to be actually one of the foundational responsibilities of government and all this tax money while they're focused on all these other boutique interests, no one is coming to help you. No one is going to keep you safe but yourself. Just absolutely unbelievable. If you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Wes has been doing this for a really long time. I mean, you might have a friend who used a real estate agent that the dog walker used, and that real estate agent's been in the biz for like 3 years. Yeah, okay. Wes has been doing this for a long time. He's been through all the market ups and downs, and he's able to do a couple things for you off the bat. First, he's going to give you a free market analysis so you know, like, how is your home positioned, you know, depending on how things are going in your neighborhood or your city. What you can expect, basically, so the process is transparent. And then he can come in with his Listing Boost concierge service, and he can help you make some cosmetic upgrades to your home. He can even help you pay for those up front. He can manage those projects or take the stress off of you, because the home selling process and the moving process is stressful enough. When it comes to making those cosmetic upgrades, Wes said because the real estate market has been a little slow, that is something that might be necessary.
You know, I'm hearing a lot of things. People are, oh gosh, well, you know, there might be a recession coming up. I'm like, hey guys, anybody working in real estate has been living it for like the last 30 months or so. It's a strange conundrum though, because sales are low, but prices are still very, very high. You can still sell and you can plan on making a lot of money, but you might have to prepare your home a little bit harder and do a little bit more work than you have in the past, because buyers are a little bit, you know, less forgiving.
Yeah, and Wes and his team can help you with that. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, I want to talk about some national news, has a local angle though, and it's a topic that we have covered quite extensively. I really do think that the tide is turning, not only on the transgender biological men competing against women or girls in sports. I think the tide is definitely turning on that. But in general, on this extreme gender ideology, there was were some speeches given on the floor of the House in Congress yesterday, one of them by R. Pramila Jayapal, that to me show perfectly, absolutely illustrate that the left is starting to lose their grip on this issue, and they know it. So let me set this up. So I love this new Congress's priorities. Lake and Riley Act, like day one, right? And now they just passed a bill. Only two Democrats voted for it, but that's okay because Republicans reunited behind it, that bans biological men from participating in female sports. And so obviously it's got to go to the Senate and all of that, but this is great. And I think planting that flag and saying for each member to have to vote on it, to me, is even if it doesn't make it across the finish line, to me is worth it. You know, that's why I would love to see, for instance, one of these bills at least get a hearing in Olympia, so you had members who had to vote on it and actually be on the record saying, I want men to compete against women. So that, I think, is a good first step. Let's go. I want to play Riley Gaines really quick. So Riley Gaines, of course, former collegiate swimmer who's been, I think, more than anyone, absolutely fundamental to turning the tide on this debate. She had lost to a biological man, started speaking out about it. She appeared with congressional Republicans after this vote.
And I'm thrilled with the passage of H.R. 28, the Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act. But truthfully, I'm mad. I'm mad that this is something we have to do. I'm mad that we as women have to beg for equal rights. I'm mad that we have to beg for privacy in areas of undressing. And I'm mad that we have to beg for safety on the court or on the field or walking in the streets at night, for that matter. We heard of things like genital exams. We heard that girls will be asked to show what's in their underwear. We heard that they have to show internal and external anatomy, inspections, Taliban-like enforcers, hire predators to peek at girls, on and on and on. Weird fear-mongering about predators. But that's what Democrats do best. If you don't know what they're up to, just look at what they're accusing the right of. There have only been a few girls. Another thing they said, there's only a few girls who have been injured at the hands of a boy. It's such a small percentage. I heard that this bill is a waste of time. And let me tell you, the message I received when I heard that is that I'm a waste of time. Girls around the country, just like me, are a waste of time. Your daughters are a waste of time to all House Democrats except the two who voted in favor of the Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act. Men do not belong in women's sports. And with the House passage of the Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act, we are one step closer as a nation to making sure that not one more male athlete is able to take a trophy, a roster spot, playing time, resources, or an opportunity to compete from a woman.
Amen. Amen. Love Riley Gaines for that. And she was referring to a couple of the speeches given by Democrats on the floor, which I'm going to play two of them in particular for you, because they're absolutely unhinged. And again, they just prove that the only argument they have is fear, right? Fear and guilt, I guess. They want to make you feel guilty if you don't support this. They want to make you feel scared. That's all they have. So here is Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal of our state, the chair of the House Progressive Caucus, attacking the bill.
Instead of focusing on lowering costs and raising wages for the American people, the things that Republicans said that they were going to do, their first bill that they brought to the floor this week was a bill to categorically ban transgender girls from school sports. Now, I want to be clear. Americans do have real concerns about fairness, and it's important that we have those conversations in a way that seeks to educate Americans about the facts, including what the data shows, how small this population is, and other key factors. But I also want to be very clear that categorical bans like this one harm all girls and are invasive and impossible to implement. How do you verify a girl's, quote, reproductive biology? If a young girl, if your daughter, does not look feminine enough, does that mean she's subject to examination now? It's cruel and inhumane. And so today, to trans people everywhere, I want you to know I see you, I stand with you, and I will never stop fighting for you.
It's cruel and inhumane. Now she cares about, oh, women feeling like their privacy is being invaded, girls feeling like their privacy is being invaded. When you've been advocating for men to be in their locker rooms, for boys to participate against them. But now you're saying, oh, we can't pass this because girls, their privacy will be invaded. They'll feel unsafe. Nobody believes, nobody wants, nobody thinks that banning men from girls' sports means that you're going to have some perv in there peeking at their genitals so you can figure out what they are. Nobody thinks that. She wants you to think that. Sadly, some people will believe it when she says it. But of course, there are many other ways. If there's a true, first of all, we know who the boys are. We know who the boys are. There hasn't been an example in collegiate or in high school sports where it's been a question where people are like, we really don't know. No, you know who the boys are because like 2 years ago they were a boy and now they're a girl, referring to themselves as a girl. And if all else fails, look at their birth certificate. And if all else fails, do a test. Test for their chromosomes, their DNA makeup. There are many, many ways you can find out if someone is a boy or a girl that do not involve taking a peek in their pants. And she knows that. But they're losing the grip on this debate. And so what they have to do is traffic in guilt and fear and hyperbole. AOC, chief among them. This one is the floor speech, right? Yeah, here is her speech on the floor.
Here we are today. Republicans.
Here we are.
Who have voted against, consistently, against the Violence Against Women Act. Who have taken away the right of all women to choose and have control over their own body. Who, as women, are bleeding out in parking lots across the country, standing there, allowing us to die.
Where is that happening?
Now want to pretend today that they care about women. And why? To open up gender and, yes, genital examinations into little girls in this country in the so-called name of attacking trans girls. And to that, today, what we have to say are two words, not today. The majority right now says there's no place in this bill that says it opens up for genital examinations. Well, here's the thing. There's no enforcement mechanism in this bill. And when there is no enforcement mechanism, you open the door to every enforcement mechanism.
Good God. Wow, that was unhinged in a lot of different ways. But again, now you care about girls and like their privacy? You haven't cared about that at all. And no, transgender girls are not girls. I'm sorry. They're not. I'm not. We're not playing that game anymore. And you can tell by how unhinged she is and the lengths they're going to try to demonize people who just want to protect girl sports, that they do feel like they're losing the grip on this. They do feel like their regular tactics of fear-mongering and naming and shaming and labeling aren't working anymore. A lot of people, myself included, we just don't really care. I don't really care if you call me a transphobe. I don't really care if you protest outside one of my events. I don't really care if you call me right wing or whatever it might be. I just really don't care. And I think that there's a lot of Americans who are starting to feel that way. Like, okay, you want to call me a bad person for protecting my daughter's ability to be able to play basketball against just girls and not be checked by a dude? Then yeah, call me whatever you want to call me. I'm still going to fight for my daughter and her friends and all these people. And so, you know, not allowing the fear and the guilt and the shaming and the labels to bother us, not just on this issue, but really any issue, is the key to getting out of this insane period of time. Their tactics only work if we let them work. And as soon as the fear doesn't work and the labeling doesn't work to shut us up, then they have nothing. Then they would have to debate based on the strength of their ideas. And in this case, the strength of their ideas is not very strong. And so they lose on the merits. Every time they lose on the merits. So they will do and say anything to avoid having debates on the merits. And that shows you who's on the right side of this issue. So another positive development in the fight to protect girls. Love it. All right. We don't talk about Denver often. You know, I'm always talking about Oregon and California. I gotta give Colorado some love because I need you to know that we're not really the only place where insane things happen. There are other blue states and blue state residents suffering, just like us. So in Denver, this is a two-part story for you. Ultimately, I think it has a good ending, but it's insane that it was even considered. So in Denver, there was a vote of the city council to allow for more needle exchange programs. So bring us your dirty needles, we'll give you some clean ones so you can keep injecting these deadly drugs, right? So the Denverite explained the story like this. The changes made by Bill 24-1791 are simple. It will remove the limit to how many needle exchange programs and allow them to open within 1,000 feet of schools and daycare centers without the need for exemptions. The change was recommended by the Denver Department of Public Health and the Environment. You gotta love how it's always the agencies whose job it is to do the exact opposite, pushing things like this. Like, oh, the Department of Health? Yeah, let's make it easier for people to do deadly drugs. The Department of the Environment? Yeah, let's hand out a bunch of free needles so that they're all over the parks and sidewalks. It's just insane. So in Denver, the law had been that it allowed for 3 needle exchanges. And there were exemptions on how close those needle exchanges could be to a school, to a playground, to a daycare center. Makes sense, right? Like, hey, you know, a lot of these used needles, they end up on parks where our kids play. And so maybe if we make sure that the needle exchange is far away from a park, that it's not as likely that that will happen. So went from the law being 3 needle exchanges and you had to get an exemption if one of them was going to be within 1,000 feet of somewhere where kids congregate, to let's just take the guardrails off entirely. You have as many needle exchanges as you like, and you can hand those needles out right outside of daycare if you like. No big deal. Yeah, that's what they're prioritizing in the city of Denver right now. But thank God, the mayor of Denver said, no, thank you. Now, he still supports the program as it is today. So I don't want to give Mayor Mike Johnston too much credit. But he did veto this right after they passed it into law. He said the ordinance is the wrong solution at the wrong time. He says, I support harm reduction strategies and also believe we need to place more emphasis on connecting individuals from needle exchange programs to substance misuse services. Substance misuse? Oh, God, is that another woke term? Not substance abuse, substance misuse? You're just misusing it. Nicole, you're just misusing it. You're not abusing it. You're misusing it.
Misusing the heroin?
Yeah, you're misusing it. There's other ways. The crack? You're just misusing it to help them break the cycle of addiction. So he supports it as it is, which I would argue, like, look, needle exchanges aren't at the top of my list for harm reduction strategies that I'm angry about. I mean, safe injection sites, I think would be at the top of that list. Using taxpayer funds to hand out buffing kits so people can get the drugs in their booty so they can get high faster. Like, yeah, those are more so at the top of my list. But, you know, the whole idea with the clean needles is so you're not transmitting other sorts of communicable diseases through dirty needles, etc. But, like, at the end of the day, them sticking a needle full of fentanyl in their arm is much more dangerous and deadly than any communicable disease that they could get. And so you're giving them, via taxpayer funds, you're giving them the tools they need to kill themselves. And I'm just not okay with that anymore. Like naloxone, Narcan, yeah, I've met people who've been brought back to life and they turned their lives around and that was sort of the thing they needed. I don't think if you have a drug like that, you just let people sit and die on the streets when you can save them. But at some point, and the mayor kind of alludes to it here, are you keeping them alive to give them another chance to kill themselves? Or is there a mandate that through that harm reduction, they have to take steps to better their lives? For instance, when you dole out Narcan or a police officer or a firefighter does, individuals have the right to refuse transfer to the hospital when they come back to life. I've seen it with my own eyes. That shouldn't be the case. I just used a taxpayer-funded drug to bring you back to life. You're coming with me. We're going to the hospital. You're on a 72-hour hold because you're clearly a danger to yourself. How hard is that? And so what he said there is that, like, I don't support the expansion, but we need to place more emphasis on connecting individuals from needle exchange programs to substance misuse services to help them break the cycle of addiction. You know, all these like harm reduction or down in San Francisco where they had the needle injection sites, safe injection sites, as if you can inject these drugs safely. I remember one of our friends went down there and kind of tried to, you know, see what it was all about and pretended to be a drug addict and went in, just got a little kit funded by the taxpayers with all the stuff they'd need, the tinfoil and all of that, to be able to take their drugs. And there wasn't even anyone there to help them with services. There wasn't any referral to services. There weren't any pamphlets given out about where they could find services or where they could get help or the dangers of using these drugs. So you have so many of these harm reduction efforts where you're literally just helping to keep them in addiction and doing nothing or requiring nothing of them in return. That's insane. That's asinine. And our tax money should not be paying for that. So I'm glad that the mayor in Denver vetoed this, but a lot more work needs to be done to understand that giving a druggie a clean needle is not helping them. That's not harm reduction. That's helping them harm themselves. Wild stuff. All right, Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital, they're going to have another one of their Know Your Risk webinars coming up on Thursday, January 30th. This will be the first one of 2025. And so if you've got questions about the new administration, what that might mean for your retirement portfolio, sort of looking at 2025 and what's ahead, whatever new policies Trump might push and how that could impact your retirement portfolio, now's a chance to ask all those questions totally free, no commitment or anything. You can sign up knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. And you'll also get a full, in case you're interested, a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. Is that not what we all want when it comes to our retirement? We all dream, we plan, we have a vision of what our retirement is going to be, and we want to make sure that the money is there to do it at the back end. And that's Bulwark Capital's number one focus, is managing risk. So join them for their free live webinar Thursday, January 30th. You can sign up right now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. All right, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll, shall we? I asked you guys about, so obviously we're in this period of flux in Washington State. Jay Inslee's gone. Bob Ferguson is sworn in today. I asked, are you more hopeful about the future of Washington under Governor Bob Ferguson than Governor Jay Inslee, or less hopeful? Nicole, what do you think? More, less, or unchanged?
Yeah, probably unchanged.
Unchanged, eh?
Yeah.
A lot of people, yeah. Right now it's about 50-50 between for subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X, between less hopeful and unchanged. 6% are saying more. So there's a little optimism there.
Yeah, like I said to the lady at the pool, I know we're going to make it. So it's I have the same... faith in our resilience in this state.
Yeah.
But I don't see him making any positive changes.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, am I more or less hopeful? You know what? I'm going to say more, as much as I despise everything Bob Ferguson stands for.
Okay.
Only because you wouldn't have been able to get any change whatsoever with the same person, right? I mean, we knew what we were getting. Mm-hmm. So at least with change, there's a possibility of different, and there's mm-hmm. a possibility of better, where before there's no possibility because we've gotten the same thing for 12 years. So I'm going to just say more, just to sound positive.
I like your optimism.
Thank you. I feel very optimistic.
I think the reason I didn't choose that was because I'm more scared of Bob's, what he could do.
I'm terrified.
That terror is what keeps me on the same level, because there's Inslee, who we knew wouldn't do anything positive and everything was about climate change and he had no other concerns in the state.
Yeah.
And then there's Bob, who has the potential of an evil villain.
I know, the potential. Yeah, it's like, you know, what is the grass is greener on the other side, or the devil you don't know.
Right.
Or the devil you do know, it might be better than the devil you don't know.
Right.
So let me see. Mm-hmm. Sharon says, I usually try to be optimistic, but the only concrete basis we have to go on in deciding what to expect from Bob Ferguson is his past performance as attorney general, which was not positive. It was hilarious. I was having a little tit for tat. There's this old curmudgeonly Seattle PI reporter. Mm-hmm. Like, Seattle PI is long since defunct. I mean, the guy's like 85 years old, maybe older.
I kind of miss it.
But he still likes, his name is Joel Connolly. He still likes to troll me on X.
Oh, I see those.
And I just, yeah. I like it because I know it's probably his only so the only thing he's got to look forward to, you know? So he trolls me on X and I give it back to him and I just sort of get some enjoyment out of it. But he was railing on me for being too hard on Bob Ferguson, mm-hmm. saying I should give him a clean shave in this new position. What the hell kind of journalist thinks any politician who's been in office for 25 years should get a clean shave when they get more power? You do realize that's like the opposite of the purpose of the free press, right? You get no clean shave from me. You want, so you know, so Donald Trump gets a clean shave? So that the slate is wiped clean for Donald Trump then, right? 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 All his past issues, he gets a fresh start. No, bullshit. And you know what? It's not the job of the media to make excuses for politicians either. I see that. I see that down in California. Oh, well, you know, Karen Bass, so the whole she's in Ghana or whatever it is. And like, I'm guilty of this sometimes, too. They can make excuses for themselves. We don't have to waste breath, space, airtime, words, making excuses for politicians. They can, will, and do make excuses for themselves. That's not a good use of our platforms. So I always laugh when anyone who thinks they're a journalist wants to preach to me about how I'm being too hard on a politician in power. Not being hard enough. In fact, let's ratchet it up. Right. It should be even harder. Let me see. Kathleen Brosey says, why should he change? He lied while campaigning. He let the sex offenders out. Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. Why? It's between unchanged and less optimistic. So I voted for less because while Inslee was incompetent and, I apologize, not very smart, Ferguson is devious and has no conscience when it comes to lying. So yeah, I'm less hopeful now. That's kind of what Nicole said too. Son says, I'm hopeful, but not because of Bob. I wonder why else you're hopeful. Oh, maybe because of Trump.
Maybe
because of Trump, yeah. Mm-hmm. Robert says, less. The new governor is more capable and the legislature is further to the left than before. Ideology and dogma are at higher levels than before. Yeah, I have to agree with that, too, is that, you know, they're clearly emboldened and we have no one to blame but ourselves. I mean, we aren't to blame. But voters, you don't just get, you know, on the cusp of a supermajority on your own. You get there because people voted you in. So as much as I want to blame the politicians, like they were voted to go do these things and they held these positions and that's what they're there doing. So it really comes down to voters trying to make better decisions. All right. Let me see.
Within all this, Nick Brown's kind of just flying under the radar right now. But I kind of wonder what will happen with the AG's office and Trump and if that's going to be this big distraction as it was. Or I think that Bob likes the attention on him. So he's going to really keep the attention over at the governor's office instead of Nick getting some attention for more lawsuits.
Well, I think TBD on who is the most vocal about Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Like, is it going to be Bob Ferguson, who has a press conference every single day about things Donald Trump does? And to what extent is he going to be hyper obsessed with that as he has been for the last 8 years? And how much is Nick Brown going to do exactly what Bob Ferguson did? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, he seems reasonable, but for instance, Nick Brown should disband the previous Attorney General's Domestic Violent Extremism Task Force. We've reached out to the no response yet, right? On our questions. We've reached out to the AG's office with this long list of questions about the Domestic Violent Extremism Task Force, but we understood that like his spokesperson for the AG's office is moving to the governor's office. So this is one of those examples where maybe I'm not surprised they haven't gotten back to us. Mm-hmm. But if by the end of the week we haven't gotten a response, now it's on Nick Brown.
Yeah.
Now his office needs to respond to us. And we did send that email directly to the task force. So somebody should be responding to us. The problem is they can't answer our questions about all the problems with the task force. Mm-hmm. So a lot of TBD on some of these people who are going to be in charge and what they're going to prioritize and how ideological they're going to be as opposed to actually getting stuff done. All right, getting to comments here on Inslee. Kent Cole said, following the science makes zero sense. He speaks like a juvenile. He must mean that he lacks adequate, intelligence. Marksman Hitman, nothing like evil telling us it's better when we're told what to do and tax our elderly and raise gas and groceries. Yeah. Tegan, almost every bill introduced yesterday was proposed with this statement. A fiscal note has been requested, but we do not have it yet. Yeah, so they don't have the fiscal note on any of these tax proposals or bills or anything. Well, it's the beginning of the session. Caroline Bellici, the ultra wealthy will move out of state to one of the other states where they own property and they will still be able to keep their jobs. Yeah, 100%.
There's always a way around it for them.
So it's going to fall to us. Sergeant Pickles, $4.99 super chat, 100% deliberate on the public safety front. They ban guns, vilify the police, and then promise the only way you can be safe is to relinquish more money and freedom. Exactly. I should put my tinfoil hat back on. Sharon Barber, anyone heard from Bill Gates regarding the wealth tax? Yeah, he ain't paying that wealth tax.
No.
He's not paying that wealth tax. Mario Kart Wii fan. 13.
I thought that was funny.
I know a guy who moved from Washington State to Florida, and he told me he felt like he moved from North Korea to South Korea. yeah, I could see that. Rocket Scott, I had to get a physical therapy every year when I played sports. Dropped trow and a nurse grabbed my balls. Am I entitled to compensation? That's so true.
It is.
You get
true.
A physical. That, that is a really, like, good point.
That is a thing.
We already do that.
We and require you get, physicals before you start sports.
Well, and also as a child, they're acting like, oh my God, genital exams. We all get genital exams. Yeah. It doesn't have to be a school employee that says, drop your pants. They're a doctor. Get a note from a doctor that says, this is a biological boy. Nobody in the school has to do it. See, they're just being nonsensical, obviously.
I don't understand why. Like, the crime and everything we get. Stupid. I don't understand how they got every Democrat other than two from Texas to sign on to this thing. Or, like, to say no to this thing. Yeah.
Ideology rules the day.
Get it. Without question, these people have daughters. These people have constituents, I'm sure, are telling them how they feel about this. And they're just like, this is how I'm supposed to vote. So this is what I do.
And I mean, that means I don't know who the two no's were.
Or who were two Texas senators.
Two Texas. I mean, so,
yeah.
So eight members of our delegation voted yes. Oh, every Democrat. If you're represented by a Democrat, which would be anyone who's like west of Ellensburg, essentially, or Cleellum, or not Ellensburg. All over here, they voted to say boys should be able to compete against your girls in sports.
Yep.
That's just awful.
The two Republicans voted.
And yes, they will never be able to escape that. They will never be able to escape that. And that's why I kind of love it. Make them vote.
Yeah.
Make them vote on this crazy stuff and make them own it. They can't be passive about it anymore.
Yeah. I mean, Adam Smith, next time we talk to him.
Adam.
How?
Adam.
I don't get it.
Man, it's really something else. Let me see. Andy, Ferguson won't put up with incompetence from his people, which is something that Inslee did. You think he won't put up with incompetence from his people? The issue is when you're governor. If you have to fire someone who's the head of an agency, it still reflects poorly on you. It means you've made a poor choice because you're appointing all of these people. And that's one of the reasons why Jay Inslee would not change the head of DCYF, despite ample failure. And they're doing it because that was his choice. So when you put someone in a position, then they're a political appointee. Like Donald Trump is really the only president, for instance, who's been willing to say, you're fired. He fired a lot of people around him for incompetence because he was business minded. But when you're a politician, you look at that as, well, I can't admit that I did something bad. Exactly. I can't admit that my appointee failed. Bob Ferguson won't hold the people around him accountable. Not at all. All right. Okay. Before we get to our closing sanity check, I have encouraged you to take the First Mark Challenge. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. Why? Because you could save thousands of dollars, people. It sells itself. And it doesn't even sell itself because you don't have to pay for it. First Mark Insurance, the First Mark Challenge is completely free. You just go over your current insurance with them, talk to them about your insurance needs. They go out for free. They shop the market for you, and they come back with their recommendations. And we've heard from so many Undivided viewers and listeners who've saved hundreds, if not thousands of dollars a year. And you never pay First Mark Insurance. They're a broker, so you never pay them anything for their services. So it's like this concierge service where you can get better insurance for a better price and you never have to pay anything, and you could be saving thousands of dollars a year. So just make some time for it here in the next couple months. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMark, especially since your property taxes are probably going to go up soon. So we're going to have to offset that a little bit. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. All right. I've liked Chris Cuomo on News Nation. Let's get to a little clip from him in our closing sanity check. I feel like Chris Cuomo, maybe this is who he was all along, but CNN wouldn't let him be that way. So he just was who he thought he needed to be at CNN. But News Nation, maybe he can be who he wants to be. I don't know. But he pointed out something about these committee hearings. So I've already said hearings in Congress, congressional hearings are worthless. Absolutely, utterly worthless. If we just did away with them altogether, I think I'd be fine with it. Like, I love transparency. I want the hearings, if they're going to happen, I understand we want them to happen in the light of day. But they would be far more productive if the cameras weren't there, because all you get are all of these members of Congress completely grandstanding. They don't even care. They're not even asking questions for answers. They're just making statements with their time, trying to get a little soundbite they can share on TikTok for four more days until it's banned, and social media and all these things. They're completely worthless. Nobody actually wants to do the business of being a member of Congress. It's absolutely disgusting, and Chris Cuomo slammed both parties when it came to Pete Hegseth's hearing.
Hegseth handled himself better today than most of the people questioning him. In a hearing that was about his ability to honor an oath to serve, the Senate committee showed they could not live up to their own oath. The enemy is the inclination that was on ugly and obvious display today. I keep telling you this, and I keep pointing it out, because nothing frightens me and disgusts me more than these two parties and their damnable game of petty division, no matter what else is at stake. They're talking about who is going to protect us at the top of the Pentagon, and these are the things that they thought mattered most. We have to do better.
A freaking man. Chris Cuomo. I like it. Chris Cuomo, John Fetterman. These are good turnaround stories that I like. Welcome to the side of sanity. We have plenty of room and the water's just fine. That has been our sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Let me see. Housekeeping. I feel like I'm missing something. Maybe, yeah, we're going to be talking to Brian Haywood later today about this urgent effort to try to protect the parental bill of rights. So be on the lookout for some information on my conversation with him. Other than that, if you haven't signed up to support our show already, please do so. Undividedpod.com. It's just $5 a month. Old media has failed you. Old media has failed us. So support new media, like us, and allow us to continue to do this job full time. That's about it. I think that's it. Nothing else? Okay, cool. We'll see you tomorrow, though.